This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Islamic society in general. But without further ado, I'll proceed to the talk itself, which will be delivered by Yusuf Chambers, and the topic will be about his journey to Islam.
Wow, I made it. The wind is windy, and the roads are quite dangerous. I've seen about 4 or 5 trees down on the way. Alhamdulillah, none of them actually hit me. So I managed to get here in one piece, thank God. Really, my name, Yusuf Chambers. I don't know, probably some of you may know me, some of you probably don't want to know me. But anyway, really, basically, my journey started off when I was born, because you've got no option but to start your journey when you're born, right? Because you didn't ask to get put in this world, right? Did anyone ask before, you know, arriving to arrive? No? Did anyone choose their name before they were born? Their skin color? No? Yes, their mother and father? Did you choose your mother and father's names? No, you didn't. So you were put in this world without, you know, consent, right? And one of the things that you have to do, if you really want to be intelligent about this world, you have to ask yourself, what on earth are you doing here, right? Just like if I send you on a journey, we're going to go on a journey pretty soon with this tent, but the thing is, if I send you on a journey, right, and I say to you, meet me at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, we're going on a journey, what's the first thing you're going to do, right? What are you going to do? You're not going to turn up, right? You're not going to turn up, because I haven't told you the destination yet, okay? So we're all on a journey, a shared journey, right? Agreed? We're in a wide-body jet, and I'm the captain. No, I'm not. I wish I was, but I'm not. And when you're in such a situation, you have to do everything you possibly can to find out what is the purpose of that journey, and what is the destination, and what happens when you get to the destination, so on and so forth. So, when I was about 7, I disobeyed the authorities most of the time, yeah? I struggled to understand why I should learn to read books about Peter and Jane. Remember Peter and Jane books? No, Peter and Jane?
No.
But they still read Peter and Jane books. They read Jane and Jane now, and Peter and Peter. But the thing is, the important thing is, right, that at that period of time, when I was very, very young and very confused, and my parents hadn't specifically said to me, you know, Tim, my name is Tim, still is really, yeah, you know, your purpose is X, Y, Z, right? And they haven't given me any inkling or indication at all about what my purpose was. So, to be frank, my mind just used to wander a lot. There was a person in my class who had read every single book in the library. Yes, she was the SWAT. Yes, she's probably lecturing you guys now in this university. And I was the only guy who hadn't read any of the books on the shelf, because I considered that, what was the purpose of it? What, I mean, does it relate to why I should, to know more about myself, to know more about the purpose of existence? That would help me. So the first thing that we have to do is look at the purpose of existence. So I went through school not really learning much that they wanted to teach me, but I just used to ask people questions and used to chill out with people and, you know, basically make, be antisocial, I suppose you could use the term antisocial. And then they put me in a set, they put me in the remedial set, because they said that this guy's mentally subnormal, he doesn't have the ability to reason. There must be something wrong with his connections in his synaptic connections in his brains or brain. I only had one, I think I've still got one. So they put me in this remedial set and they labeled me, right? Now that's what they do, right? Nowadays, they have to attach a label to you. They have to be able to describe you. Are you white? Who cares whether I'm white or black? Really? What difference does it make? Are you Asian? Caucasian? Are you Irish? Are you male? Well, when I'm, a lot of the time now, we're not sure whether male or female. Some, you know, I mean, things have happened, you know. Not really. There's four or five. There's not male and female anymore, is there? There's lots of other categories. They've labeled us to death. They really have. So, anyway, they labeled me as this guy in the remedial set, and I just got worse and worse, because I thought, well, if they're going to label me like that, I may as well just really act up the part, you know? So I spent most of the time being tutored by three teachers in the class and being administered beatings by the headmaster. Then we used to be able to get beaten. Yes. Used to, the threat of beatings was real, and it used to happen. So we used to have a thick leather wallet to put down our trousers, because we knew pretty much it was going to happen, because we weren't prepared to toe the line. Okay. So anyway, it went through the sort of primary school stage, and I got to the end of the primary school, and they said you have to stay on for another year. You know, you have to be punished for another year in this place. So, got through there, and then eventually I got to the secondary school. And one of the things I remember, just to go back, about primary school, was there was a guy called David Dilly, really nice guy. And he taught me how to play football, and he kind of took pity on me, you know, saw me as a bit of a social responsibility project, you know. And he also taught me how to play chess. So there's this guy in the remedial, you know, set. Being, you know what remedial means, right? Yeah, just checking. I don't. That's why I was there. Right, so anyway, so there I was, learning how to play chess. He put me in the chess championship with the school, and I got to the final. So I got to the final, and I was playing the guy who was teaching me, so I threw the game. Right. Anyway, so J.J. Hook is on the stage. He's the head teacher of the school. And he says, you know, he's giving out the medals, you know, so he gets the third place. And then he starts reading out the name, you know, second place. Timothy Chambers. Timothy Chambers! He nearly fell off the stage, you know. How's this guy in the remedial set winning chess games? You know, I mean, anyway, so what I did was basically disprove their theory about me being remedial or needing, extracurricular, support in the school. What the issue was for me is about prioritizing that knowledge that you get. First of all, before you get knowledge, you have to find out why you're getting knowledge. Why is everyone here at university? Tell me, one of you tell me, why are you here at university, my brother? You enjoy learning. Wow, you even look like I used to. I had the same beard, the same long hair. I had a couple of, unks in my ear here and stuff like that. You even look like me, man. I chose the pictures. Are we related? Yeah, we're probably related, yeah. So very few people give an answer like that. That's amazing. That is really amazing. Who else can give me an answer? Sister, tell me. Why are you here at university? Is it because your parents sent you? They sent you indirectly, or? Expectation. So sort of social expectation, stuff like that. What about you, sister? Why are you here? Sorry? To get somewhere in life. Right, so we're on that journey, right? But where? Before we, you know, analyze how we're going to get somewhere, right? And surely we need to know why. So we have to ask ourselves why, right? So the reason I went to university when I eventually got there, and it's a long, long story about how I got there, because I had no qualifications, and we used to have GCSEs, and before that we used to have A-levels. We're still doing A-levels, right? Yeah. Right. And then I did an access to higher education course, and I got to Sussex University. And the purpose of my going to the university was, this is it, that I was told that the top 5% of people in the world, intellectually, thinkers, philosophers, you know, designers, the innovators, were there at the university. So I said, that's it. Because I couldn't get the answers to my questions outside the university, and I tried, believe me, I had tried so hard. I used to annoy people. I was a perpetual annoyer. You know, I used to annoy people so much because I just asked question after question after. It's like my son now. He's so annoying. He asked me so many questions. But that's good, right? That's healthy. You know, the moment we stop asking questions, we know we've got to ask ourselves some questions, you know. Really. We've got to ask questions about society and about why we're not asking anymore. Why is it that we, you know, it's a social vacuum when it comes to talking about the purpose and talking about religion, religio. Religio is to reconnect, right? That's what it means. The term religion is to reconnect. According to Cicero, that's what he said. But, you know, so here we are at a place of higher learning where you have access to hundreds, thousands of top minds, and you've got a lot of people that want to know, they want knowledge. They came here to seek knowledge. So the first question that we need to address with each other is philosophical. It's foundational. It's causation. You know, if we don't ask those questions, and we don't come with an express purpose of, you know, because just because we say we're a Muslim doesn't mean to say we know, by the way. So I put a Facebook post about 2 weeks ago, and I said, what are the topics you guys want to know, if I want to give some talks, what are the topics that you want to suggest? So number one topic was the purpose of life for Muslims. Right? Just because you say you're a Muslim doesn't mean to say you've read the Quran. Just because you say you're a Christian doesn't mean to say you understand the philosophy of Christianity. Just because you say you're a Buddhist doesn't mean to say you understand Buddhism. Right? We're all humans and we're all in this shared journey. And we're coming together today to discuss the topic which is very rarely discussed openly, freely and fairly. In a, not in a microcosm, but in a macrocosm. In terms of this tent, you know, how many different ideas do you think we have from these different minds in this room? How many? But how often do we find it difficult to talk about those things? We would rather talk about whether Birmingham City got thrashed last night or Leicester City, got the away goal the other day. Against Seville. Or we want to talk about Jennifer Lopez. Or we want to talk about, I don't know very many of these names, actually, anymore. I used to know them, right? Who's everyone talking about right now? What are you guys talking about? What's the most popular subject in campus right now? What do you think it is? Huh? Silence is golden. Hey? Who? Who's that? Okay, fine. Okay, but the point being, I went to university to find the purpose of life. Okay? I didn't go there for some dumb piece of paper that says BA, MA, PhD, you know. Because the bottom line is that that's going to get you a job, but it ain't going to get you knowledge. It's not going to get you knowledge. It's knowledge for the sake of knowledge, as far as I'm concerned. So the prophet used to say, I seek knowledge which is beneficial. Knowledge which is beneficial. So all of us need to seek the knowledge which is beneficial, first of all, to number one. And then to your friends, your circle of friends, and then your neighbors, and then your neighbors' neighbors, and then your city, and then your country, and then the universe. Anything's possible. So there I was at university. So I got in first day, very excited. I'm a fresher. I got in. I've signed up for all the activities, the religious groups, and this and that. And I'm looking for these great minds who can enlighten me, that can, you know, tell me what is the purpose, or just discuss it with me. And to my shock and horror, the top 5% of the world were not able to furnish with me even a decent discussion. In fact, I was having better discussions outside in the vegetable markets. Do you understand me? Because actually what I found, correct me if I'm wrong, the majority of the people were coming here to escape their parents' authority and to experience life. What was to experience life? You know what I'm talking about, bro. Right? So what I did was I took time out. I started to travel a lot. I traveled, I went to Africa, I set up some development projects in Southern Africa and in the townships in apartheid South Africa. I traveled, I went to Malaysia a few times, I stayed in Langkawi, in the islands in Langkawi. I don't know, then it was beautiful and unspoiled. And just reflect me and the night sky, you know? Just to think. Go run up the top of mountains every now and again. Yeah? Take your mobile phone and throw it off the mountain if you want, but don't take it with you, really, I would advise. Just go on top of a mountain and just start to think about who you are, who are your friends, what's your relationship to the universe, to the worlds, to the lands, to the mountains, to the sea. And so I used to do that a lot. And I used to come back and then try and find people. And I went through a period of just looking for religious people, and they would find me. I wouldn't find them, they would find me. So I met a guy that I went to school with many, many years ago, and I was just walking through the streets of Soho in London. I was just walking through and I met this guy. He just had a ponytail and bald head. His name's Sean Phelan, if he's still alive. Maybe he's alive. And he said to me, come to our temple. So I walked with him. So I was prepared to sit with a group of people at least once, maybe two or three times, to try and hear them out and listen to what they have to say. So I sat down with this guy, had some beautiful food with him, vegetarian food. And then he took me into this back end of this, the center. And he sat me in front of this guru, And he said to me, "You are going to be a great orator." After 15 minutes discussion, he doesn't know me, right? I don't know him. He doesn't know me. But I know he needs more people to come to his center. So it's a great little sales pitch, you know? Because everyone's got sales pitches now. You've got an elevator pitch, right? The university's got an elevator pitch, right? Who knows the elevator pitch of the university? No? I don't know, I haven't checked it out, I haven't done the research. But everyone has an elevator pitch. So this guy was bigging me up big time, this, that, and the other. So I said to him, "Look, I've come here to find out the purpose of life. Not to be bigged up. Because I've got nothing to be bigged up about. Just tell me, what is the purpose of life?" So he said to me, "You'll have to come and live with us." I said, "I have to come and live with you in order to find the fundamental, the answer to the fundamental question. You're a religious person, right? You're a person who's, you know, you've chosen to take a spiritual path in life. Tell me how I can gain access to that spiritual path." So, after 15 minutes, I wasn't convinced. I left the place. I never went back there. It happened to be a Hare Krishna center, right? Could have been any center. I didn't care what it was called. They labeled it, but I didn't label it. I just went there to meet the people, to find the knowledge so that I can live my life. That's it. To share my journey with those people so that I can impact on that life better. So that I can look after my own self and other people in this planet in a better way. So I left that place. And then I was walking through campus one day, not aimlessly, but I was looking for somebody, and a girl came to me and said, "Come to our church tonight." And it's like people were coming to me all the time. Because, you know, I was seeking. And if you seek, you will find. It's a verse of the Quran, actually, but there's a verse of the Bible as well. It's probably a verse of the Vedic scriptures as well. It's probably a verse, they're probably, virtually all of the books of knowledge and wisdom will talk about the same stuff. Because we're all human, we all came from the same beginning. We're all going back to the same beginning. You understand? It's obvious. It's so obvious. You know? So, there, she invited me to the church. I didn't know what, I didn't even care which denomination it was of Christianity. I got into the church. I had a great social feeling, and, you know, I thought, great, I'm going to find some information out about the books of life today. Amazing. You know? And it's a real, it's amazing. You know, when you actually go out sincerely seeking knowledge, not just for the sake of knowledge, but seeking knowledge for a real beneficial purpose, just try it one day. You probably, you already do it. You probably, you guys, you're probably already doing it. Don't just assume, "I'm a Muslim, I know where I'm going." Don't ever be so presumptuous. "I'm a Christian, I know what I'm doing." Don't be so foolish to think that you are in a position, that you were born in that position, and you have a birthright. You, none of us have a birthright, right? Without seeking knowledge, without struggling, without going to the horse and asking the horse. You know? You need to go and seek from the people of knowledge, whoever they are, whoever they, those people that you can see consider knowledgeable. So there I am, I'm in the church, and the guy, he comes out on the stage, and a guy with a guitar, another one with drumsticks. And they start singing. They start singing about Jesus. "Jesus is your Savior. He's inside of you all. And redemption will be got through Jesus entering you," and all of the song and the music. And suddenly, you know, the music started and then everybody stopped. Everybody stopped and listened, apart from me, because I was just looking around left, right, and said, "What's going on here?" Suddenly, the conversation ended. and everyone's mesmerized by the people on the stage. So I went there because I'm thinking I'm going to get knowledge. So suddenly the guy points to a person in the middle of the crowd. He says, "And the devil is inside you!" I'm thinking, man, I'm next. I'm next. I'm pretty sure that that's why they brought me here. They're going to do some stuff to me, and then they're going to say the devil's in. That's why you're asking all these questions. So I kind of edged my chair back, looking left and right, edged it back a bit more, Out the door, never went back, never came back. Because it freaked me out. They didn't explain to me what was going on. They hadn't addressed me yet as, "Tim, you've come here to find out the purpose of life. We know the purpose of life. Or we think we know the purpose of life at least. Can we explain that to you?" No, go straight to the music. So I left. And when I used to see the girl, "Hi, how you doing? I'm a bit busy now." Yeah? And that was it. Next thing, I'm depressed. Because a lot of people, you know, we get depressed. And we have to be honest with ourselves. Because we live this life of drudgery. We, you know, we go from lesson to lesson, from workplace to workplace, from hospital to doctor surgery, dentist when you get earlier, when you get later, you know, you start visiting these places, you start getting toothaches and headaches and neck aches, and you get diseases and you get colds. So you keep, anyway, you keep going around in the society. Functionality, you know? You eat, you sleep, you wake up in the morning, you think, "I'm going to eat again." You get to about midday, "I'm going to eat again." Functionality. Right? And then you go off and you go to work because you have to pay the bills. So you pay the bills, and at the end of the week, you have to pay the bills next week, so you have to go to work again. And then it's just Groundhog Day. Has anyone seen that film, Groundhog Day? Isn't it? Groundhog Day. If you haven't seen it, go and watch Groundhog Day and you'll know what I'm talking about. So you break up the monotony. So you put music on to fill your soul. Because music makes you feel good at that moment. Yeah, man. Oh, those guys look really sad. I'm happy. Because I've got music on. You fill your soul. And then, you know, I was obsessed by music. Obsessed. I was into Shostakovich and Beethoven and Mozart. And then I was into punk. And then I was into, you know, other stuff you don't want to know about. And I perpetually have this music on. And it's very difficult to imagine a society without music, right? Isn't it? Who watched a movie that's got a silent movie, no music? Have you ever watched a silent movie? Can you imagine watching a movie, a Hollywood movie, with no music? Impossible. It's not going to happen, right? Because music fills the soul. So people, they're listening to the music all the time. So society is just imbibed. It makes you want to buy things. It makes you want to sell things. It makes you want to be someone. You want to be someone because you're listening to that music. Right? That's the reality of music. We know what music is. You know, it fills the soul. But then when you turn it off, you get depressed again. You start thinking too much. You start asking too many questions. So I was very depressed one day, and I knocked on the door of the biggest church I could find in Brighton. I was there in Brighton. Knocked on the door. I was crying. I said to the guy, "I need to know the purpose of life. I can't live like this anymore. what's the purpose of me, you know, being here? What is the reality of me being here? Please tell me. He looked at his watch. He said, we're closed. You're closed? But I need to know. He said, come back Monday morning. I said, you are having a joke on me, bro. He was having a laugh, bruv. I mean, what do you think this is all about? You should be open all hours if you're spiritual. You shouldn't be turning people away. You got the biggest church in the street, bro. What's going on? Biggest church, smallest brain. That's what I was thinking. I was depressed. I was sad. I was ready to go and drink another drink. Another whiskey, maybe. Yeah? Listen to another bunch of music. Fill my soul, to fill my mind. But you know what? It takes a very strong person not to do that stuff. And when you do that stuff, when you break away from that, and you really try to be you, and you really be true to yourself, that's when you feel the best in your life. You know? So anyway, I went back on Monday morning. I said to him, I need to know the purpose of life. So he says to me, have you ever thought about doing a theology degree? Natural fact, I had, because I tried to get to Trinity Dublin to do theology there. But then when I read through the syllabuses, it didn't actually address the question of what's the purpose of life. There was no section saying, right, we're going to start with A, then we're going to move to B, then C, and then D, and then E. So I said to him, no, I really don't think that's going to help me at all, you know. But can you just answer the question, what is the purpose of life? He said, look, if you're not really interested in doing theology, I'm not really sure I can help you. I said, you don't know the answer to the question or what? He said, look, I come here in the morning, I open the door, if anyone wants to come in, they come in. If they want to go out, they can go out. In the night, I lock the door and make sure everyone's left before I lock the door. That's my job. So people had been sent to me, and I've been going to them, and I was getting these questions answered slowly but surely in the negative, right? Because it was a negative situation for me, because I wasn't getting answers. So I went, and I had a friend who was a Buddhist. Another time he took me to the Buddhist center. I started doing Buddhist meditation. And I would do this meditation. It made me feel better. It made me feel like I was, you know, like a little bit fulfilled. And then one day, after 3 months of learning this stuff, I asked the guy, I said, what's the purpose of life? Don't ask me why I didn't ask him the day one, but I just like the meditation. So I asked him, what's the purpose of life? So he was stirring his herbal tea at the time, and he thought about it for at least 2-3 minutes. It's like he wasn't really sure himself. And then he answered the question. He said, the purpose of life, Brother Tim, is to contemplate the supreme nothingness. The supreme nothingness. I said, bro, now you're confusing me. I'm sorry. That has totally wiped my brain. You're the first guy actually to try and, you know, objectively, maybe, subjectively, maybe, answer the question, what's the purpose of life? And you've done it. You've told me something about supreme, and I was, supreme, wow. Nothingness? No, don't. Please, what does that mean? So, and then he gave me a book called the Golden Sutras. He gave me a book called the Golden Sutras, and I got to page 1. I couldn't understand it. I went back to the beginning of page one. I got to page two, couldn't understand, went back to page one, put the book down and said, I don't understand this at all. Now, if I'm... Wow, we're going on the journey soon. So, I went off and I never went back to the place. Because the guy didn't know the books of life. He was really good at meditation and I continued doing the meditation. And all of the knowledge that they taught me, which was beneficial, I continued to use that. Yeah? And then several other things happened. I mean, so many people. I'd be meeting people all day and all night. I mean, just madness. But I still didn't feel very fulfilled. And I felt depressed. And I wanted to continually make myself intoxicated. So that I would not have to think too much. You know, I'm dealing with a lot of homeless people in Leicester now. I've got a city, a center called the City Retreat. Most of the homeless are just paralytic most of the time. There's a reason. Most of them, they dropped out of society because they don't know the purpose of life. And society doesn't have any norm or any answer for this question apart from... You descended from the monkeys. Before that, there was natural selection. Before that and that. There's a science answer. But actually, it doesn't. It's not a fulfilling answer. It doesn't actually tell you what is the purpose. It tells you kind of how we got here, but there's no purpose. Right? So there's a science answer. You'll hear this a lot. In fact, the BBC... verbatim will state our ancestors. So it's more than a theory now. It's the truth, right? The BBC said it's true. It must be true, right? The British Broadcasting Company. They said it's right. It must be right. You know, how arrogant. How deception. It's really a deception. So, anyway, got a long, very, very long story short. I had this girlfriend, like you do, society here, girlfriend, boyfriend, boyfriend, girlfriend, other friends, stuff going on, and then... One day, I was with her in the halls of residence, and she said to me, she said, tomorrow, Tim, Vamush, don't come here. Please don't come here. Now, this girl, I really loved her a lot. In fact, I almost worshipped the girl. You know, it's the first time I actually felt like I actually had something in my life which was worth living for. The girl. The boy gets girl, the girl gets the boy. You know, well, maybe some of you don't. But maybe some of you do, right? So, there I was, with the girl, with the, almost like she's become the purpose of life. You know? And she tells me, don't come here tomorrow. So I said to her, what's this all about? She says to me, well, it's got something to do with my religion. That's the clue. So I said, well, okay. It's got something to do with your religion and you're kicking me out. It's wrong. So either your religion is wrong or you're wrong. There's only two possibilities. So I'm logical. Just logic, right? Either that or you're just making excuses, you don't like me anymore, you know. So in the morning, I go to the Islamic Society. Knock on the door of the Islamic Society. A man comes out wearing Iraqi brother. Iraqi, you know, the land that was bombed incessantly by generations of governments and destroyed. the seat of civilization, Baghdad. You know? Amazing country before we destroyed it. Anyway, he comes out. He stands in front of me and he says, "How can I help?" I said, "Yeah. See, I've got this girlfriend." Some of you can't relate to that, right? You don't tell an Iraqi you've got a girlfriend. I said, you don't tell a Muslim you've got a girlfriend, because it's just not really the done thing. So anyway, he says to me, "You've got a girlfriend." Yes, and I need help with her, you see, because, you know, I love her, and I think she loves me. And I think that, you know, you could help me to kind of, because there's something wrong today. She told me to leave. So he says to me, "Listen, this girl's not good for you, and you're not good for her. So you kind of need to leave. I said, "Listen." I said, "There must be something wrong with a group of religious people that tell people that love each other to leave each other. That's just dumb. Don't even tell me you're going to tell me to leave her. And what good can there be in me leaving her? Surely you should be encouraging me to stay with her. It's good." So he says to me, "Read these books." Goes to the back, gets a whole pile of books, lands them in front of me, and he says, "Go and read, and then you'll understand." So I start to read these books. 2 weeks I'm reading these books. Yeah, reading everything about how to make ghusl, you know, how to make ablution, wudu, how to make ablution, how to pray, what is a Muslim, who is the Prophet, this man called Prophet Ibn Abdullah, the Prophet Muhammad Ibn Abdullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. What is the book which was sent to the people to instruct them about the purpose of life, this Quran. I was reading about the history of Islam. I was reading about the righteous companions. I was reading about just about every possible subject under the sun, including some of the chapters of the Quran, which I even committed to memory before I even really... I wasn't a Muslim, right? Because I didn't understand what the term Muslim means, like so many people, right? Because that needs a lecture in itself. So anyway, I knocked on the door of the girl, and I said to her, "I just want to apologize to you. Because I was wrong about your religion, but I was right about you. Your religion's good, man. I like it. I don't know about you, though. You know." So slowly but surely, she learned to hate me. Bad move. If you want to get a girl, don't tell her the truth. Right, so, you get my... Well, you know what I mean. Back in the day style stuff, yeah. So the more she grew away from me, the more I kept reading the books of knowledge. So I kept reading and reading and reading. Anyway, towards this month, of course, this month was what? Ramadan, right? It's the month of the day that she flew me out. It was the first day of Ramadan in the morning, and she wanted to fast. We wanted to fast because we fast the daylight hours of the month of Ramadan. Why? Because the Quran was sent down to who? Pakistanis? Bengalis? Yeah. No. Irish? Yes. British? Yes. Koreans? Yes. Chinese? Yes. Humans? Yes. Animals? Yes. The moon? Yes. It was sent down for the whole universe, right? So when she felt like I need to go back to the one that created me, she told me to leave. Makes sense, right? So I started to understand why she was doing it. And then I started to go to the mosque. I started going to the Islamic Center. And I started to engage with the people. And then I started joining the prayers with them. Now, none of this really mattered to me or didn't really make a lot of sense to me until one day. One day, I also knew that I should be fasting. In fact, every human being alive should be fasting. It's not a Muslim obligation. It's a human obligation. You might be thinking, well, what an extremist. Call the prevent officer. Get him arrested. Right? He's suggesting that I should be a Muslim. How would you be left? You see what I mean? But it's true. It's absolutely true. But only you'll only accept it if you read the Quran and if you read about the Prophet Muhammad and you know who we're dealing with from the sources. Not from the BBC. Not from Channel 4. Not from the Daily Fail. No. Not from Twitter. Not from Facade Book, Facebook. No. You need to learn it from the sources, like I did. Now, I was forced to have to do it to get the girl, right? I was forced. I was pushed into a corner and said, you better read these books, boy, or you ain't getting the girl. So the more I read, the more I realized I needed to practice something. And it made sense. So I woke up one morning, I started fasting. Now, the day I started fasting, whether, you know, because everyone's got a different, you know, take on things and, you know, experiences. You can never really explain an experience, personal experience, to a group of people and expect them to understand it, because they ain't going to understand it, unless they've been through it themselves. But the day that I started to fast, in the month of Ramadan, when the book was sent down to mankind over a period of 23 years, 1430 odd years ago, and to a man that could not read or write, a man that could not speak poetry, a man that could not intellectualize about things because he wasn't an academically trained person. The day that I started fasting was the day my eyes opened. So on that day, I felt a massive change overcame me. And I just kept washing myself. I don't know why, I kept washing myself. I was washing and cleaning myself and trying to make myself like different from before. And in the evening, my friends came and said, let's go to the nightclub. And I said, I'm going to take a rain check on that today. I don't think that's going to be very good for me. I don't think it's going to help me to fulfill my purpose. Because I understand my purpose now. So I kind of went towards the masjid, the mosque. I searched for a mosque. And I went in there and this guy grabbed hold of me. His name was Najib. And he said to me, what are you doing here? I said, well, I'm doing what I have been created for. What I believe I have been created for is to worship God. From all of my readings, I have to worship God, and there's only one God worthy of worship. And this man, Muhammad, along with this Jesus, and that John, and that David, and that Adam, the first man, and all of those Anbiya, all of the prophets, they came to instruct me about how to worship God. And all of the books that were sent, the Bible, the Injil, the Psalms of David, and the Quran, the last testament of mankind, I accept that. So, what do I need to do? He said, have you washed yourself? I said, I've been washing myself for 24 hours. What do you want about that? He said, well, how did you know about this religion? I said, well, you know, it's a long story. I'm not going to repeat it. But just, so I took Shahada. Now, the Shahada is very simple. It's just, I testify, Ashhadu la ilaha illallah. There is no God worthy of worship but Allah. Wa an Muhammad is his messenger. And by default, we accept all of the other prophets and all the other books, which are correct, in their correct form. If you can bring the correct forms, we accept them all together. So I took Shahada, and then, I don't know if any British guys in the room? Yeah? We're all British, right? Trick question. So we're all, I don't know whether how you describe it, but I'm Irish, I'm half Irish, my father's Irish, my mother's English. But my mother and my father, I don't know what it is about our culture, but we never got hugged at all. They didn't show love. And I, even now, sometimes I find it difficult when my son's big, you know, he's up there somewhere, and I can't really hug him. But I've seen a lot of Asians and Arabs perpetually hugging each other all the time. In fact, if you go to the Arab lands, you'll find two men holding hands. Habibi! Ya Habibi! Ya Habibi! My darling, how are you? And, my darling? We can't do that in England. So anyway, I took this Shahada, and 300 men hugged me. 300 men. That was an awesome feeling, you know. And as far as that goes, that day, that's the day when we start to experience the difficulties. You know. Because, you know, your culture is very different from 99% of the people that you will meet in a mosque. You know. You see? See, if you look at like Abdullah Quilliam in 1889 when he opened the first mosque in Britain, a very successful lawyer in Victorian Britain, he goes from Morocco, comes back to Liverpool, he opens a mosque. He's the only Muslim in Liverpool. And he says, I'm probably the only Muslim in the UK that he knows about. See, when he opens the mosque, he does his worship on a Sunday, and he calls all the people around, and he plays hymns, but he takes out the shirky bit. You know, he takes out the bit about Jesus being the Son of God and stuff like that, which is probably made up, Allahu Alam. Definitely, probably. Allahu Alam. Yes, you know what I mean. And he takes that out, and he continues the service on Sunday. And then he starts to feed the poor. So the first day he opens the mosque, he feeds 1,000 people from the street. That's what Jesus, peace be upon him, would have done, right? That's what Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam used to do, right? That's what Noah used to do, right? All of the prophets used to do those things. So he opens up the center, he feeds the poor. Then he opens up an orphanage in Liverpool. In Liverpool. An Islamic orphanage, you know. This guy, the prevent officers have to visit this guy, man. There's something wrong with him, you know. You don't like prevent? Oh, okay. It's not prevent, it's called create, by the way. So they've rebranded it. Yeah. So, prevent extremism, create extremism, is when you go into a community and you talk to this guy, same guy talks to that guy, and talks to the, you're not a guy, girl. And, yeah, I got that bit. I'm not that extreme. Right? And then he talks to that guy and he says, that guy's really bad. You see that guy? He's even worse. Yeah? And then he sows the seeds of dissension in your heart. That's what's happening today in Britain. And then they'll go to this group of people via the media and they'll say, see those guys? Do you know what they said? You know what they did? Oh my God. They're extreme. And then they sow the seeds of dissension against us and them. They create the disease of dissension between us and them, us and them. And so we can't talk to each other. In fact, we feel so strange, estranged from each other, that we don't talk to each other. And even now it's got to the point where we don't talk to our neighbours in Britain anyway. We don't even know the name of our neighbour's cats anymore. Hi, there's a nice cat there. What's his name? I don't know. Right, we know, we see the cat more than we see the people that own the cat. Really? Seriously? We've become estranged from each other. And we can't even talk about the fundamentals of who we are on this shared journey in this wide-bodied jet. We can't even have a decent conversation about why we're on this journey. He wants me to end, so. So guys, really, essentially, I just wanted to tell you about my own story, and everyone's got their story to tell. But the important thing is we haven't ended the journey. That the good news is we have not ended the journey, right? Because otherwise you'd be dead, right? And you're not dead, because I can see you're all breathing, right? You put your hands up if you're not dead. Don't put your hand up, bro. Do you understand me? So we can talk. Now, just very briefly, just to end this talk, yeah? So the Quran actually specifically does say about the purpose of life. Because it's one of the things that you will be asking me, yeah, but you know, you went through all this stuff and you're going to find the purpose of life. Well, what is the purpose of life? So according to the Quran, okay, it is merely to accept that God created you and for you to do as much you can for God in this world. Now, who is God? What is God? God is the one who is uncreated. He's not created. He's not subject to the creative processes like everything else. He's the only uncreated. What do you call it? Tell me. Uncreated what? Entity. Right. To use the term. So if you just get rid of the term God for the time being. Get rid of the term God. Because of course it's become very negative to use the term God. Oh my God! It's the only time you can ever use it, right? When you're basically cussing. Oh my God! Oh no! And you use the one that created you. Yeah. So just leave the term God and just think about entity. And think about the reality of who you are and where you are, with whom you are, and what you are here for. That's it. If you can do that and sincerely do it without having, yeah, but my priest told me this. No, the imam told me this. No. The guru told me this. No. Jamie Vardy, he's brilliant at kicking a football. I'm going to become a football player. No. Just whatever it is in your mind, empty your glass. Empty your glass and you can fill it. But you have to do it with sincerity. And that I honestly am saying this, that some of you might come back with 1,000 rejoiners and tell me, Yusuf, yeah, but that's your experience, right? And you're right. It's my experience. But telling you guys my experience helps you to maybe try to go down similar paths so you can find answers yourself. Don't just accept. Question, right? Okay? Thanks very much for listening, guys. And I'll hand you back over to our maestro for the day.
Thank you very much, Yusuf. And I'd like to thank you all for being so patient and listening to the whole talk so quietly and with attentiveness. Before we start serving the food, just a couple of quick announcements again. Today we have another talk at 6 p.m, which is titled Women in Islam. It will be in the Arts Main Lecture Theatre. Again, it's one of those topics which many people have misconceptions about, so I'd encourage all of you to attend. Once again, it's 6 p.m. Arts Main Lecture Theatre. And another announcement that I have is, I forgot to make this announcement yesterday, but yesterday we had a talk on Islam in Europe, and I'm sure many of you, you know, appreciated the history that Islam has in Europe. We're continuing that historical theme, where the Islamic Society has a talk about Saladin and the Crusades on Monday in Guild Council Chambers at 5 p.m. And the speaker is Zahir Mahmoud. So I encourage all of you to attend that as well. Before we finish, I'd just like to say the way it's going to work for serving, as it has been for the last 3 days, just queue up around the side, take your food. We do have plenty of food, but please be a little considerate. Don't go like five times. But we do have enough food for everyone. But if you're going around for your seconds, please reuse the same cutlery. We do have a shortage of that. Thank you very much. If you have any questions, you can come and speak to Yusuf at the end individually. And I hope to see you soon.